Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio representing the public interest, not special interest. Broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso on KNSJ 89.1 FM, your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Our topic today is Lake Morena. The city has a plan to drain part of the reservoir at Lake Morena to meet the city's water needs. And that's stirring up some controversy among rural residents who live near the lake and love it. My first guest is Brent Eidson, and he is with the City of San Diego's Public Utilities Department. Brent, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. I also have two Lake Morena residents, Don Gravelick, a local attorney.
Thank you for having us this morning.
And Naomi Anderson, who is a teacher in Lake Morena.
Thank you for having me.
Brent, let's start with you. Can you explain to us, please, why the city has decided to drain Lake Morena and just how far this draining is going to go?
Sure. The city of San Diego owns Lake Morena and the water in Lake Morena.
Yes.
I don't know if you know, the lake's been there since 1912 and has been part of the city's water portfolio that entire time.
Right, way back when.
Correct. So over the most recent years, and why the lake has not been transferred lately, is because of some infrastructure challenges downstream. So those have been corrected now, and so we're in a position where we can start to use the water out of Lake Morena again. Our intention is to make water transfers until there's about 2,000 acre feet of water in Lake Morena, and that water will be transferred down through our system to our drinking water treatment plants to provide drinking water to the city of San Diego's population.
Now, it's an unusual situation in that the county leases the land around the lake, and the county has invested in building cabins, campgrounds. They earned something like $360,000 or $380,000 in revenues last year alone from primarily the camping and the fishing. What about the impact, Brent, that this would have financially on the county?
Well, you know, that's a fair question, and it's, the answer is somewhat in your question itself, and that is that is the city's property, and the county does lease that from the city of San Diego. And that's a 99-year lease that was entered into in 1991. And it's clear in that lease that the opportunity for the city to use the water at any time is there and maintained within that lease. And the county obviously entered into that lease willingly and so is aware that that's a possibility.
Supervisor Diane Jacob has expressed concerns about this draining, serious concerns. And she came up with a compromise proposal where the city would take some water, as it has apparently a right to do, but stop short of the level that a county parks and recreation study says would cause massive fish kills, and that Supervisor Jacob has also said potentially could impact firefighting, maybe not enough water there for that, and also make those lakefront cabins no longer have waterfront views. Why has the city not agreed to the compromise proposal that the supervisor proposed?
Well, from the city's perspective, that's not much of a compromise at all. It's a statement that says don't use what's rightfully yours to use. What the city's position is quite simply, it's part of our drinking water supply. The value of the water versus having to buy that water from the County Water Authority or from the Metropolitan Water District in LA is about $5.5 million. Mm-hmm. So we had to go to our customers recently and say, we're already having to buy more water from the County Water, or pay more. We're buying less, but pay more for the water from the County Water Authority and raise the rates by 15%.
So it's really about money. They don't want to have more of a financial burden on the City of San Diego taxpayers, or ratepayers, I should say.
Right. It's not just money. That's obviously a driving factor. You know, we have a resource here. It's a much less expensive resource. Our water ratepayers are paying for the facility, maintaining the facility, and making sure that it's available for them when they need it. That's part of it. The other part of it is that ratepayer dollars are not allowed to be used for general recreation activities. That's part of the California Constitution under Prop 218, which was passed in 1996, which talks about when you're charging somebody for a service and they're paying a fee for that service, and all the expenses related to that service need to go solely for that service. So recreational activities are general fund tax dollars. And so if there's any decision not to move the water, then general fund revenues would need to be found to
pay
for that.
Now, the last time the city drained Lake Morena was back in the 1980s, I believe it was, and there was a lawsuit challenging it at the time. The argument made in court, which the judge did not agree to, was that, hey, the city left this lake alone for 10 years. They created a habitat. Now there's wildlife out there, and you need to do a CEQA study, California Environmental Quality Act, impact study, beforehand. And the judge said, no, they ruled that this was just a water transfer, that it was ministerial, that it wasn't really considered a new project. Is that basically the legal argument that the city is hanging its hat on today, that it has a right to do this and it doesn't have to worry about the impact on the wildlife, even after the wildfires, which have burned, quarter of a million acres, half a million acres, something like that, in our backcountry, and obviously have destroyed a lot of other habitat?
To your question about the legal authority, yes, we do believe that the existing lawsuit, even though it was a number of decades ago, there hasn't been a change in that legal standing, and so we have the ministerial right to move the water.
I want to go on now and talk to the residents and get their point of view. Naomi, let's start with you. When did you move to Lake Morena?
About 5 years ago, I moved to Lake Morena, about a block away from the lake, the park next to the lake.
And what was it that drew you to this area?
Quite honestly, the lake. I had camped at Lake Morena several times and just thought it was absolutely a beautiful place, and I couldn't imagine looking over at the community that I would ever be able to afford to live in such a community. And it just turned out that I was able to, so I was very excited to move there.
Did you know, were you informed when you bought the property that someday the lake could be drained or partially drained?
No, I was never informed of that. It takes a long time to sort of do local research to find out what's the general feeling of people out there. They kind of keep to themselves, but I've been a bit of a community organizer, so I have a good feel for what people feel about the lake.
So what was your reaction when you heard the news, and then what have you been hearing from some of the other residents that you've been talking to since then?
My first reaction to hearing the news was, of course, shock, and I immediately started to talk to my other neighbors, and they were shocked, and everybody's pretty depressed, because I guess when this happened back in the 80s, some of the impact that they saw was massive fish kill. There was a smell that came from the lake that was just overwhelming to the local residents that live right next to the lake, which also brings up a concern. We don't have mosquitoes because of the size of the lake, and they're concerned that if it gets drained too low that we'll suddenly have stagnated water that will create mosquito problems.
Which could mean a West Nile virus or a public health concern.
Right. And the other concern was the wells. We have tremendous problems with well water out there, and right now we're battling high levels of uranium and nitrates, which makes our particular little Lake Morena village very unattractive because of the water issues that are only going to become intensified once the water table drops.
Now, what about businesses? I believe you've spoken with some people who own businesses out there. The last time this happened, what happened to them, and have they recovered since then?
There were several little markets out there, and the story that I got from interviewing people was that as soon as they drained the lake in the 80s, that the economy completely dropped off. There was a little place called the Malt Shop that was a bustling, happy place, and it became pretty much a ghost town. They're like little...
The community of Lake Morena and, to a lesser degree, Campo are largely tourism-driven. Is that an accurate statement? How much of the economy out there is dependent upon that lake?
I would say the local economy is pretty much 100% dependent on tourism. They have bikers that go out there on the highway that they just paved. Everybody goes to Lake Morena to see the lake. It's according to what I researched, it was one of the most popular destinations in the county park system of San Diego.
Yeah, there are. It does have a lot of visitors that it draws from the city of San Diego as well as the county. Don, let's move on to you now. You are an attorney. Tell me what you think about this draining of the lake, and do you see any legal options that potentially residents could or will pursue?
We're hoping that there are options. The case that the city is basing their actions on is something that was decided a quarter of a century ago. The lease that was revised was a half a century ago, and the original creation of this lake was a century ago. hopefully in the time and the progress that we've made in our society, particularly over environmental concerns, those concerns will have a greater voice in deciding this. It's clear that the city doesn't want to look at the environmental issues because it's not something that they're going to win on. They look very, very bad. The consequences are high. You can't take a lake like this, drain it, and think it's not going to have a major damage to the ecological system that has been created because of that lake. Mm-hmm. 100 years ago when that lake was formed, before it was formed, there was a stable ecological system out there. There were plants and animals that were living there. Many of them now are endangered. Mm-hmm. But when they filled it up with water and drowned all those plants and changed the entire structure of the ecology, now to withdraw that lake and return it to a mud flat is going to be a severe consequence. And again, the city would much rather not look at that. All they want is the water as cheap as they can get it because of their poor budgeting and lack of conservation.
Do you oppose any drawdown at all of the water after all they do own the water? Or is it more an issue of the level at which they should stop? You believe they should simply keep it high enough that it sustains the fish and the wildlife and so forth?
There's no reason not to use it as a viable resource, and to use some of the water is fine. All they're doing, though, they're doing this as a single event to drain this lake because they've got a budget problem. They don't want to pay for the water elsewhere. So they're going to destroy this. It's going to be gone.
And they've told that we should add the county that if the county wants to keep the water so that it'll have fishing cabins, the county can do so, but it needs to pay the city $1.7 million. Now, I've read the lease between the city and the county over that, and it looks like county and city, you know, agreed to hold each other harmless for things that might come out of this arrangement, but it didn't seem to say anything about residents or businesses. Don, in your view, would businesses or property owners who may suffer a loss of business or a loss of property value or enjoyment, do you believe they have any legal recourse potentially against the city if this goes through?
Well, I believe that not only they are taking from us, and this is something that we have no representation in because they, you know, again, these very, very old agreements, these agreements today, in today's world of ecological concern, this wouldn't be happening. But this is something so far in the past, and it allows them to act with impunity. So, yes, we believe that the individuals, the businesses, the homeowners, and potentially the recreational people as a class may have an action against the city because of the destruction of the lake. But see, the other thing is that although this case that we're talking about, it does say that there do not have to be ecological studies done before it's damaged, I don't really see anything in there that says that there's an inability to pursue damages that go beyond those contemplated when the agreement was entered into, which is under California law, a very, very valid approach. So I really believe that the city is opening the door to a great deal of litigation. And in fact, the amount that they are saving in the water, if this really comes about and all of this happens and all the, you know, the rotting fish and the damage to the ecology and all these things, the city can be very assured that our community will be doing every possible thing that we can to seek redress with the city.
A little bit of background here. This was originally proposed. The draining of the lake, it predated the Filner administration,
correct,
actually.
Right.
It was originally proposed in 2012.
I should say it was not only proposed, it was determined. It was an action that was taken at the city to start that process in 2012.
Yeah. Now, Diane Jacob, Supervisor Jacob, voiced her concerns to Bob Filner when he became mayor, and he agreed to halt this. So it stopped under Filner. Then when Todd Gloria was named interim mayor, he ordered the draining to proceed, and in fact, it has begun as of December 1st at the rate of 20 million gallons a day, and this is going to go on for about 3 or 4 months to complete the process. Brent, a question for you would be, Mr. Gloria's interim mayor, what was so urgent about this that it could not wait until the early spring when the new mayor, whether that is Councilman Alvarez or Councilman Faulkner, takes office and let the new duly elected mayor make this decision instead of someone who's temporarily appointed to fill the vacancy?
Well, there's a couple of answers there. First and foremost, the former mayor put a temporary stop. It was not a full stop. He asked the department to come back with additional information about the rights and the value of the water, which we provided to then Mayor Filner. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he was overcome by other events right around that same time. And so we've been on hold for quite some time. The other thing is it is a ministerial act. It's an operational act. And so while Todd Gloria is in interim capacity, the authority is still within the city manager, which we call as chief operating officer, to do. So it is something that we, combined with the CEO, went to interim Mayor Gloria and explained the reason we're doing that, and he agreed with our rationale.
Is there an end to this? Is there a point at which the lake would be drained sufficiently, you'd move on to a different reservoir, a different water source, and this water level could be restored for the residents? Or are they looking at a permanent potential drawdown here?
Well, it's not permanent. Obviously, it's a completely, the water in there is not connected to the imported water. So as rain comes and we collect rain, it'll fill, and we'll continue to use this as a drinking water reservoir.
But
I can't tell you today
what the... As the rain comes, you're going to continue to drain it to this level?
We're continuing to use it. I can't tell you at the levels yet because that will depend on what we need operationally. And that those will be case-by-case decisions. But,
so it could be
but we can anticipate that this is the manner in which we intend to use the lake from this point forward.
For the residents, have you spoken with the two mayoral candidates to get their points of view on this?
We have not yet had the opportunity, but it is our intention during the debates to pick it so that this will become a mayoral issue. You see that? Well, we were talking about this. Why is this happening during the time of the interim mayor? Because this is really politically dirty. They know it. Mm-hmm. And this is doing a really bad thing.
Have you spoken to other city council members?
We only found out about this last week. It's amazing, but
very fast.
Right at Thanksgiving, between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So what's happening is that by having the interim mayor make this decision, this has really relieved whoever the new mayor is of what it could be a very politically damaging thing, because people that care about ecology vote, and even if they live in San Diego, they care about it, because most of the people that go to this park are from San Diego. There's nobody out in the back country, so these are San Diego residents that are using this park and enjoying the environment.
Brett, would you like to respond to
sure.
this?
Sure. The City of San Diego, through our department, conducted recently what's called a cost of service study, and that's where we determine what our revenue streams are versus our expenditures and make rate recommendations based on such. That was taken to the City Council in September and then voted again in November. And in that cost of service study, it specifically talked about the use of this local water. And so while, we're saying that the decision was made during interim Mayor Gloria's time, it was actually voted upon by the council 8-1 through this action to raise the rates 15% that we would be using this local water. So this is an entire city decision. It's not simply the mayor's decision.
Now, another issue is whether enough has been done to conserve water and not need to do this. Many of us that live in the rural areas have certainly been through water rationing and days where we were told not to water your lawn, don't wash your car. To what degree has your department asked the residents of the City of San Diego to conserve water?
We have been asking that of our customers for a number of years now. And as you look at what our historical usage is by our customers, you'll see that it peaked in about 2002 and has been declining ever since.
Is this mandatory?
Why not? We don't have a water supply problem. What we have right now is...
Well, the residents out here might disagree with that. I think they might think that the water supply has some very negative consequences if this particular supply is tapped into to such an extreme degree. Why would you not require more of the water users before
Again,
allowing
we don't
this
have
to
a water done? Supply problem. Remember, the City of San Diego buys 85-90% of its water. So whether we used Marina in this case or any of our other 8 reservoirs, we're still purchasing 85% of our water. And our water suppliers upstream, County Water Authority and Metropolitan Water District, right now have provided since, I think it's 2011, 2012, There are no restrictions on the amount of water we can purchase. There's costs associated with it, of course, but there's no restrictions. There's no water supply problem right now.
Don, you look like you're eager to make a point.
Yes. Previously, this water has been considered as like an emergency reserve if there's a water shortage or drought. And as we've just heard moments ago from the representative of the city, there is no emergency water shortage. There is no drought. There's unlimited waters available. So it's really the question is, how much are they willing to pay for it? There is no water emergency or other thing that is restricting the use of water other than the cost that the city's paying. And we certainly know what a mess the city is in over their pension funds and various different things of bad budgeting. So what this is strictly a financial issue. This is not a need issue. It's a cheap way out of temporarily meeting a water need. When the lake is drained and it's gone and it's destroyed, they're still going to need more water, and then they're going to have to continue buying it at the rate it's not that they're changing the rate that they're using it. It's just that they want to use up a resource that they have. It's like a savings account.
Which is one of a number of reservoirs that you have. How many reservoirs are there in the county that the city owns, Brent?
Well, the city owns 9 reservoirs.
And are they planning to periodically drain all of them?
Well, we don't. You know, it's not draining. We're moving water around to meet our customers' water needs. We use water out of all of them routinely. And as I mentioned earlier, we had some infrastructure problems downstream from Marina, and we weren't able to move the water, but now we are.
Now, you'd like to respond to some of the comments Don just made. So,
right. Yeah. Lake Marina, let me tell you, the city of San Diego has some emergency water regulations that we have in place. We have some policies in place that require that we keep 7/10 of a year of supply within our emergency storage portfolio. Lake Marina is not considered part of that portfolio. Part of the reason is because it's further out and it takes too long to move the water. So it's not part of the emergency calculation at all. It's just part of our routine water storage. And when we have the ability to move water, we will move water. The other thing is the conservation and the budgeting comments that have been made here. It's important to remember that we're not talking about the City of San Diego's general fund. We're talking about the fund that is solely funded by water ratepayers, or in some cases we've been successful at loans and grants, but this is not money that comes from your taxes. This comes from folks' water bills. And so it is important that we keep their rates as low as we can. We have folks that are finding it very difficult to pay their bills as it is. 24,000 of them are usually in dire need of...
Sure. That's not an air raid siren in the background, folks. We've got a little construction going on outside our studio today, so be patient with this here. Brent, another question for you. Some of the backcountry residents has asked me, if the city needs water so badly, why is it selling such large quantities of water to developers such as SDG&E? The city just agreed to sell them 50 million gallons for the building of the substation project out in the rural area, not too far from the lake there. Why don't they ask SDG&E to pay the cost of bringing water in from outside the area?
Well, SDG&E, in this particular case, uses what's called a temporary construction meter, and that's available to anybody who goes through our development services department and asks for a permit for temporary construction.
Why is that? Is that a city law, a state law? Is that something that
it's city policy. It is city policy. And when we enter into these drought restrictions we spoke about that we're not in now, then there are restrictions on temporary construction meters, but until that time, we don't have legal authority as a department to pick and choose who we give a temporary construction meter to. And so there was not a contractual arrangement with SDG&E. That may be what some people think. They simply went in and said that they're estimating they're going to need this amount of water. We're able to provide that amount of water, and they used a temporary construction meter that's available to anybody, single resident, to a large corporation. Anybody who has temporary construction is able to do that until we're in water use restrictions.
Interesting. The residents, how do you feel about SDG&E and the developers being able to get water from the city when the water from your lake is being drained?
Well, and see, they're paying for this. So again, you always have to follow the money. If you're looking for where the dirt is coming from, you have to follow the money. So as we trace this back, there's revenue coming in to somebody, and that is far more important to them than maintaining the ecological health of our very low voter density area out in Lake Moreno. Diane Jacob is a noble representative of our very small community, and she's our really only single voice. The city of San Diego has millions of voters, and we have hundreds of voters, so our voice is very slight. So when these decisions are made, who are we going to step on? It's the outback people, because there are so few of us there. Yeah. You can be sure that we are going to illuminate where the funding of this is and who is responsible for it and who is benefiting from it. There are definitely political people that are benefiting from this happening.
Do you believe that ultimately this could wind up being a costly decision for the city? They're obviously making it because they think it's the most economically sensible decision for the city. But if residents or businesses out there were to file suits for the damages that they incur, the financial damages, do you think that ultimately, with the litigation costs and so forth, it could wind up being not such an economical decision?
Well, it's interesting. You know, there's the hold harmless agreement between both the city and the county.
Right.
The big city and the county basically are standing back to back in this because they're two governmental agencies watching out for themselves and each other. This agreement has nothing about holding the other damages that are happening from this, from them being held harmless from those. And it would really be our desire to see if we can find some federal intervention in this, because when you have a dispute between two governmental agencies, a city and a county, that the city's a part of the county, and the city has more residents than the county, you know, outside of the county resident area, then it's very difficult to get representation in a decision
what
like that.
What federal basis could there be for intervention in this issue?
Well, we've been speaking to the EPA about it. And
Environmental Protection Agency,
yes,
at the federal level.
There is the proximity to the Pacific Crest Trail, and which is all federal land.
So are there federally protected endangered species out there?
There is no doubt. And the reason we know that is that at Freedom Ranch, which Naomi is a member of the board of directors on Freedom Ranch, they're doing an expansion. In the relatively small area that they're doing this, there in fact was an endangered plant, and that they had to take steps to protect this one plant
potentially some migratory birds as well as that are protected under actually international migratory treaty acts.
If that plant is present in such a small area and such a small thing as where Freedom Ranch is located, then you can well imagine the environmental impact on such a huge area as this. And again, one that has been created because of creating the lake. If the lake wasn't there and it were dry, it would have been a stable situation. But to create the lake and then take the lake away.
So you think there should be some responsibility if a government entity creates an ecosystem to sustain it at some level, you know,
And we're hoping that our society has progressed to the point that we can look at this and say to San Diego, you can't just come in here and rip the lake out and have the attendant damages and think that this is okay. And I'm sure that the city would love to feel that way and hope that it will be that way, but it's not. Because if the lake is drained and if there are damages, then our group is going to devote ourselves to seeking redress against the city and the people responsible for making the decisions.
Well, there you go. Brent, last question for you is, going forward, other than utilizing the water from these reservoirs forever, even if we could do that, obviously there's talk about climate change and the fact that water shortages may get more severe into the future. What else is the city of San Diego doing to address its long-term water needs? Do they have plans for desalinization or anything else other than just relying entirely on these backcountry reservoirs?
Well, again, we don't rely entirely, right? It's only about 10 to 15% of our supply.
Okay,
but absolutely, we have other plans. And we're actually in a very robust effort right now to recycle water. So right now, we have our Point Loma wastewater treatment plant is permitted to about 240 million gallons per day. We want to offload about 100 million gallons per day of that we send out to the ocean after being treated, of course, and turn around and reuse that as potable water and serve it back to the residents of San Diego so that we can get off of the imported water supply and try to reduce our use that way.
You've heard what the folks here have to say today. And Naomi, I want to circle back to you also. If this happens and it turns out to be more long-term, what do you think that's going to mean for people like yourself and the people of Lake Morena?
Well, personally, it would dissuade me from wanting to remain there much longer than I have to. I'm sure it would decrease my property value. It's really sad because right now there's sort of a revitalization going on in our community. People are coming out. There were all the homes when we moved out there where so many of them were in foreclosure and in bad repair. Families are moving out here now, and they're starting to build these homes, and their kids are playing in their yards, and it's so beautiful to see this sort of country living coming back to be. When
it's just changed a lot from the 80s when this was done last time.
Right, and it seems that families now are enjoying the area back there, and it would be a shame to see it all fall off when it's just starting to kind of revitalize, and I'm afraid that losing the lake is going to make us decrease in our ability to advance our causes.
Brent, I know that the city is standing its ground and arguing that it has the legal right to this water. But do you believe that in addition to a legal right, the city ought to look at the moral impacts and the concerns that this action, even if it's legal, which is perhaps in question, but even if it's legal, the impacts that it could have on the people, on the wildlife, and the other factor we haven't talked about yet is wildfire safety. And I'd also like to know, if the fire officials were to say that they were concerned about the water level being too low for firefighting safety, is that a factor that would impact the department's decision? Might they take another look at it and say, perhaps we should limit the draining to a somewhat higher level?
So the city's in a bit of a conundrum. Obviously, it's not our goal to have the negative impacts of the residents in Lake Morena. But we're in a little bit of a challenge here where we have an obligation to our water ratepayers who own that water and own that reservoir to provide them safe, reliable, and the most cost-efficient water possible. That's our charge. That's our mandate. We also have the challenge of the California Constitution that, again, prohibits our water ratepayers from paying for non-water-related services, be it leaving the lake there for recreational purposes or anything. And that's why we did make the offer to the county where they could purchase the water and the water would remain there and the county declined.
Yeah, the county has said they can't afford that either.
So here we are. The city has this as part of our plan. It's part of our portfolio and it's frankly, it's our right. I think some of the challenges that the community has might be better addressed at the county versus the city of San Diego. The county did enter into this lease, voluntarily. And it sounds like, unfortunately, what Naomi had said, she was not aware. It was not disclosed in their real estate documents or anything that this is an opportunity. So there might be some opportunities in that regard. As far as wildfire goes, that's a hypothetical that has not been approached. You've raised it here today, and we haven't been approached by any fire officials who have said that.
Supervisor Jacob has raised the concern.
We have not heard that from any fire officials. And we're happy to, if we hear from them, we're happy to talk about them and see if there is some solution there. But again, there is a value to that water. And so it might need to be a monetary transfer between a general fund activity, which firefighting is, and the water ratepayers. But, it's a hypothetical. So
the firefighting departments are all very strapped. They've just been going through trying to come up with money to keep fire stations opened and staffed. Some of them were even closed during red flag alerts. So I'm not sure where that pool of money from firefighting would come from.
But it's illegal to take it from our water ratepayers is the challenge, is that what our attorneys are advising us. And again, I'm not an attorney.
Yeah.
So
well, it's a very fascinating and a very complex issue.
It's unfortunate that the city is taking an action solely based on an economic analysis here. It is without regard to any social, ecological, environmental issues whatsoever. They're saying we need to use this water because we don't have other money to pay for it, so therefore we have to destroy this irreplaceable precious resource. So this one time that now that we're draining it, we're going to get this free water out of it. what's going to be left is an ecological disaster, and then the water will be gone. If there's an emergency in the future, it won't be available, and then they're still going to have to figure out where to get more water in the future.
That's just kicking the can down the road, in a sense.
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank all of you for coming on. I know it's a long drive out from Lake Morena and in from downtown San Diego, so I appreciate you joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, and you can watch for more coverage of this important issue at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, from the desert to the coast.
This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Ed Barena.
With this week's local government report, the Juliantown Planning Group meets Monday night at 7 o'clock. Hot topics include a proposed solar farm proposed on 8 acres off Calico Farms Road in Wynola, with the potential to expand on another 15 acres of adjacent land in the future.
La Mesa City Council meets on Tuesday at 4 p.m. Mayor Art Madrid will request the city attorney review the city's panhandling ordinance. Council will consider a staff recommendation to adopt the environmental impact report and master plan for Collier Park renovations.
El Cajon's council has received approximately 24 applications from people who want to fill the council vacancy. Council members will interview candidates at Tuesday night's council meeting at 7 o'clock, when the vacancy could be filled by appointment if council members can agree on a nominee. Earlier in the day, at 3 o'clock, the council will weigh choosing which member shall be named mayor pro tem. Also at the 7 o'clock meeting, council will hold a public hearing on the county's Health and Human Services Agency office consolidation and a proposed conditional use permit.
On Wednesday night at 7 p.m., Santee City Council will weigh a zoning change for a proposed mobile home park. The city will also choose its vice mayor and hold a public hearing on building code changes.
The Grossmont Union High School Board meets on Thursday night, December 12th. The agenda includes ratification of labor agreements with the California School Employees Association and Service Employees International Unions, as well as approval of salary and benefit packages for management and contract employees.
This is Ed Barena with a weather report. It's cold out there, and temperatures are expected to drop even lower, below freezing in some inland areas of East County. A frost warning is in effect through Tuesday morning for East County's inland valley and deserts, so cover sensitive plants or bring them indoors, and don't leave pets outside overnight. The National Weather Service has also issued a wind advisory, which is in effect starting Monday until 10 p.m. Tuesday. Winds of 35 miles per hour and gusts of 50 miles per hour or more may occur. High winds could make driving difficult, particularly for high-profile vehicles, so use caution when driving and watch for broken tree limbs.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. This is Leon Thompson with a Tribal Beat news report. Clover Flat Elementary School in the East County community of Boulevard has been awarded a $5,000 grant from the Barona Education Grant Fund. This week, representatives from the Barona Band of Mission Indians and Assemblyman Brian Jones are presenting the grant to Clover Flat School, which serves students from Boulevard and Hakumba. The grant was written by Alpine resident Donna Burton. Mrs. Burton is a second grade teacher and assistant principal at Clover Flat Elementary School in the Mountain Empire Unified School District. Clover Flat will use the grant funds for academic improvements in technology. The school will use the funds to purchase equipment for technology education and historical documentation. Clover Flat plans to purchase a desktop computer, 2 laptops, and a camcorder. Some projects include publishing video yearbooks and producing and recording student projects. The purchase of this equipment also allows the Clover Flat staff to produce informational videos that highlight achievements of students and the school. These videos, along with the video yearbooks and other productions, will help keep parents in Hakumba and Boulevard informed about their children's school.
East County Magazine has compiled some important holiday safety tips for you with help from Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, our Chief's Corner columnist. 'Tis the season for hanging holiday decorations. One of the most common causes of holiday time house fires results from those bulbs being too close to gutters filled with dried out leaves. Make sure that strings of lights you're using outside have built-in fuses on the lines. Check the plug and be sure you're using lights designated for outdoor use only. Use Christmas lights and electric equipment that have been tested and verified by a reliable testing laboratory. If you have a string of lights with a blown bulb, be sure to replace it with a bulb of the same wattage. Avoid using nails, tacks, or metal staples to secure your outdoor Christmas lights. Instead, use insulated hooks. Be sure your lights are strung tightly to avoid damage from the wind. Use only outdoor-rated extension cords. Connect no more than 3 strings of lights to a single extension cord, and all plugs should be plugged into a GFCI-protected outlet when used outdoors. Now, if you're using a ladder to put your holiday decorations up, be careful. Don't place the ladder in a muddy location. Watch for overhead wires. When climbing the ladder, use caution and have someone secure the ladder for you. Also, be sure to replace any cords that are worn or frayed, or decorations that are broken or rusted. Never put candles near your Christmas tree or other holiday decorations. Run tree lights only when you are home, and don't turn on the tree lights if your tree has become too dry at the end of the season. It's also a good idea to place your tree and other holiday decorations a safe distance away from the fireplace. Always put safety first to assure a happy holiday season. You can get more safety tips by visiting the Chief's Corner column at our website, www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Leon Thompson with the Sports Report from East County Magazine on KNSJ. The San Diego State Aztecs football team is headed to Idaho for the Potato Bowl game. The Aztecs will face off against Buffalo at Broncos Stadium in Boise, Idaho, and the game will be televised on ESPN. The Aztecs captured second in Mountain West's West Division, taking third place overall. The team finished the season with a 7-5 record. SDSU Athletics Director Jim Sterk said players are excited to play in the Idaho Potato Bowl and called this a great day for the Aztecs. This will be SDSU's 4th straight bowl game, a school record. Before, it took 41 years for the team to reach 4 bowl game appearances. Fans who want to head to Idaho for the big game can purchase tickets at GoAztecs.com or at the Aztec Ticket Office at Qualcomm Stadium, with proceeds benefiting Aztec Athletics. You can also sponsor a band, Spirit Squad member, or underserved youth participating in the Potato Bowl game.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson reporting on a champion of change for East County Magazine. A San Diego State instructor has been honored by the White House at a Champion of Change event as a veteran advancing clean energy and climate security. Elizabeth Perez Halperin is an assistant instructor in the online professional certificate in the Green Energy Management Program through San Diego State University's College of Extended Studies. She is also the founder and CEO of GC Green, a general contracting firm that provides a veteran-based workforce and construction solutions for energy efficiency and renewable energy projects. Perez Halperin, a member of the North Folk Mono Indian tribe, began by addressing the White House audience in her native tongue. "Part of what I said in my native language is that everything is connected," she said. "In my journey, I'm finding that everything is coming together full circle." She spent more than 8 years in the U.S. Navy as an aviation logistics specialist. Her father was a 20-year U.S. Army veteran. Today, she co-owns GC Green with her husband, Rick Halperin, who will teach 2 classes in the online Green Energy Management Program at SDSU during the upcoming spring semester. She is also on the Sustainability Advisory Board at SDSU's College of Extended Studies and helps her husband recruit students, especially veterans, as well as design the class curriculum.
GC Green focuses on developing a trained workforce of skilled subcontractors and connecting these resources with projects and opportunities for veterans. The company implements training programs, especially for transitioning veterans and for veterans who are out of work or underemployed. The firm also outreaches to large institutions and prospective project developers to let them know the benefit of investing both in the green industry and in veterans. San Diego has a high percentage of veterans, Perez Halperin said. We want to put them to work. If we don't have projects for them, we absolutely promote both our veterans and students at San Diego State to other companies.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Now it's time for the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz.
Today we have a special holiday edition of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz, and I want to welcome our guests today, Reyna and Leona.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, Reyna and Leona, are you ready for the first question?
Yes, we are.
Okay. A new East County holiday tradition is the Waddle and Trot, which is set for Thanksgiving. What type of event is the Waddle and Trot?
Black Friday shopping?
It must be a new dance.
No, it's not either one of those things. Okay, let me give you some choices. Is it a turkey calling contest in Ramona, a 5K run for charity in Santee, a roundup at the Lakeside Rodeo of turkeys, or a mall walk for shoppers at Grossmont Center?
A turkey calling.
Nope.
A mall walk for shoppers.
That sounds like fun, but no. The right answer. Any more guesses? You're down to two. Is it the Lakeside Rodeo Roundup or the 5K run for charity?
5K run.
That's
Yay,
the right answer.
I got it.
Woohoo! You got it. Okay, one for Reyna. Next question. What do wild turkeys and wild pigs in East County have in common?
They get stuffed.
Well, actually, that maybe that's a good answer. That wasn't the one I was thinking of.
But. They get eaten, that's for sure.
Okay, you know, I'm going to give you guys both a point for that. You came up with answers I didn't even think of. But just for fun, we'll read the other choices. Is the answer neither one of them can fly, they're protected from hunting, they're not native to our region, or they are elusive and hard to see?
Pigs don't fly?
They're elusive and hard to see.
Well, the pigs are pretty elusive, but those turkeys are everywhere. You drive through Julian and they're all over the place.
Oh, yeah. They'll chase your car.
The answer is, actually, that neither one of them is native to our region.
I thought of that. What did I say?
Invasive species. Okay.
Next. The turkeys come from Foster Farm.
They come from Safeway.
Okay. Leona, Reyna. Lemon Grove celebrates the holiday season with an event featuring a giant one of these. What huge item is the centerpiece of their celebration?
Lemon?
Santa?
Nope, it's not a lemon and it's not Santa. Is it a snowman, a Christmas tree, a bonfire, or, well, lemon was one of the guesses, so you're down to three choices left now.
A bonfire.
That's right. It's a
really?
Bonfire. A giant,
wow.
Huge bonfire.
Wow.
Yes, kind of like Burning Man in East County, you know. Okay, Alpine's Winter Festival brings something special in for the children. What is it?
I know this.
It's ice skating.
Nope.
Gifts.
Nope. Vieja says, that's nope.
Gifts? Presents?
They may do that. I don't know. But the choices I had were toys from Santa's workshop, snow, reindeer, or penguins.
Reindeer.
Nope, not reindeer.
Penguins?
Leonie?
Snow.
At Christmas? Penguins?
No! It's snow. They actually make it snow and the kids can go sledding and
That's
everything.
That's wonderful.
Okay. Forget Rockefeller Plaza. Where can you find an even larger outdoor ice rink? In fact, it's the largest one in Southern California.
As I said before, it's Viejas.
That's right. Viejas Outlet Mall in Alpine is the correct answer. Okay. El Cajon's Mother Goose Parade each year ends with the arrival of someone special. Who is it?
A goose.
Nope, the goose is first. Is it the Grand Marshal, the mayor, Santa Claus?
The mayor.
San Diego.
It's Santa Claus. No. Ho, ho, ho. Okay, which holiday celebration is held each year on the top of Mount Helix? You don't know?
Happy Helix Christmas.
Is it a choral concert, a Handel's Messiah, a holiday wine tasting festival, a community caroling party, or reindeer races?
Reindeer races.
That would be a lot of fun.
It
but no,
would be. I want to go.
Leona, do you ever guess?
Well, I would think in Mount Helix is probably tasting wine.
No, it's a caroling party.
Oh, caroling, that's
I live there. You walk up and go caroling all the way up the hill. Okay, where can you find Scrooge every December in East County?
At my house.
At the bank.
At the bank. I don't know that. I may be both. The answers were, the choices were, Grossmont College, Julian Town Hall, Lamplighter Theater in La Mesa, or Santee City Hall.
Lamplighter Theater?
Nope.
Santee City Hall.
Actually, it's the Julian Town Hall. They do a production of it every Christmas. Two more questions. Okay.
I'm not doing too well.
La Mesa's annual Christmas in the Village evokes a bygone era. Which one is it?
Era?
The 19th century.
19th century. Well, you're kind of close. Is it the Wild West, the Gold Rush days, the Golden Age of silent movies in the 1920s, or is it the Victorian era?
Victorian.
Raina is right. It's the Victorian era. Okay.
Oh, my.
Last one. One East County facility does something very unusual with pumpkins and turkeys every holiday season. How are they used?
They smash them?
Actually, San Diego State does do a pumpkin drop, but they don't drop turkeys. Thankfully for the turkeys.
Well, that's good.
They drop turkeys out of a
helicopter.
Nope, not that I know of. The choices are, do they use them for target practice at a shooting range?
Oh, my gosh.
Decorating and displaying at an art gallery, auctioning off for an East County charity, or feeding hungry lions at a big cat rescue facility?
Auctioning off.
No.
Feeding the big cats?
Yes, that's right.
Oh,
that's
my
the
gosh.
Right answer.
I think the most unlikely.
Well, thanks to both of you for joining us for another edition of the East County Magazine Trivia. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. It's time to start planting for this fall, and that means you need your tools to be in good shape. So how exactly do we keep our tools in good shape? Well, for one thing, we don't leave them laying out in the rain, if it ever rains again. And we don't want to put them away dirty with mud on them and dirt on them. We want everything to be cleaned up and put in a proper place inside the garage, the basement, or a tool shed of some sort. One of the cute ideas that some of my students like is buying an old used mailbox at a garage sale and posting that someplace in their garden so they can have a second set of tools or even a third one out there to grab when they see something they need to do, and that way they don't have to go all the way back to the house to get the right tool, and it is out of the way. Now, how do we clean these tools when we're through with them? Well, obviously, you can hose off your shovels, rakes, hose, things like that. I have a trick that I learned years ago that I really enjoy, and I think it's wonderful. And even my husband, who's not quite as hyper attuned to cleaning tools as I am, likes this one. We take an old cat litter box, and we fill it with sand, and pour a quart of motor oil into it, and stir it up real well. And we can slide the shovels, the rakes, and everything into that box and get a light coating of oil on the tools before we hang them up. This also has the benefit of taking the small nicks and scrapes off the edges of the tools before you put it away. Sometimes we have wooden handle tools. I love wooden handle tools. They're much better than fiberglass as far as I'm concerned. How do you keep those wooden handles nice?
That's the job for a little bit of sandpaper sometimes, and then coat them about once a year with boiled linseed oil. You can also use mineral oil. You can also use expensive olive oil. The point is, you're using an oil on these wooden handles at least once a year to keep them smooth and working well. When you are using your tools for pruning outside, your loppers, your hand pruners and everything, they have a tendency to get gummy. They get all sorts of sap on them. There's an expensive product out there that you can buy that'll remove that, but you can also remove it, the sap and the gumminess on the blades of your tools with alcohol, just plain rubbing alcohol on a rag. Rub it onto the gicky stuff on the edge of the tools, and then leave it for 3 or 4 minutes. And then when you come back, you can use that same rag and just wipe them off totally clean. There is also a tiny tool out there. It costs about $10 or $12. Look for it, and you will find it. It is a gardening tool sharpener, which you run over the blades of your loppers and your hand pruners, your bypass tools, and it will clean them. And it will sharpen them again instantly. 3 passes and you're good. It is not the same as a knife sharpener, so don't buy a knife sharpener and think that's going to work. What other tools do we need to take care of? Well, you need to take care of your hands. So for that, I recommend you get some really good gloves. Gloves that are fabric that have a vinyl-dipped fingers and hands and palms are absolutely great. They last longer than you think they will. Sometimes at one of the big box stores, you can buy a package of 6 or 8 pairs of these for about $1 a pair. They're worth their weight in gold. They'll keep your hands from feeling like, as my husband once said to me, holding hands with you is like holding hands with a pineapple. You can avoid that by wearing gloves when you do your gardening. And then I want to say a kind and loving word towards your favorite item that you need here where we water every week, and that is your garden hoses. Garden hoses should never be stowed with kinks in them. That destroys the hose in record time. Also, when the hoses are stretched out and you're using them, don't step on them. You may think that it's not going to do any harm, but it will, because small rocks can poke a hole in the side of your expensive garden hose, faster even in your cheaper garden hoses. So don't do that. Be kind to your garden hoses. Coil them up nicely with no kinks and put them away after each use.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.